Welcome back to the Face Therapy Today podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Young. The weather is finally reaching 80 degrees in Los Angeles, and it seems like progress and good news are getting hot as well here. We have been exploring what different groups are doing, mainly in the United States and Europe, pinpointing resources available. But as we constantly hear exciting updates from here and there, but nevertheless, I raised the question of just how far away is face therapy still from the general public? We know that the criteria to be eligible for face therapy is still exclusive. So what should we do if someone is in need of face therapy but doesn't have access to it in 2023? Well, I hope today's guest story can shed some light on this matter and be an inspiration. Coming from a solid, and I mean extra solid, computer science background, after finishing his Master of Science from the Royal Institute of Technology, Stockholm, Johan Wikström joined Google after brief startup experience as a machine learning engineer in various functions. And he was also the first machine learning engineer at Chatbase, a startup platform that's the largest exit from Google's Area 120 startup incubator. But in 2022, Johan took a turn in his career and founded a face therapy company, Toka.ai, that has been working as CEO for his startup. Johan, welcome to the show, and it's good to see you again.
Yeah, thank you, Stephen, and thank you for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, so I kind of intentionally left a big blank here in your story that I'm hoping, you know, you can help me fill in as we go. But before I get to the face part, I just want to say that I see this very big entrepreneurial spirit in you, you know, from startups, exploring the edge technology, joining new companies, trying new ideas, incubators, and starting your new company. So, you know, talk to me more about your story, this aspect of your, how that led to you starting your own company.
Yeah, it's a long story. So yeah, it might seem a little strange that I went from computer science into phage therapy. But I was born with cystic fibrosis. And cystic fibrosis, I'm sure a lot of your listeners know, but CF is a condition where you are more sensitive to getting infected with various pathogens. And it's because of a defect in the CFTR gene, which causes a sodium imbalance in your lungs. And various bacteria can, you know, infect and cause serious health issues in people with cystic fibrosis, including me. And when I was choosing where to go for university, I briefly considered becoming a scientist and finding, you know, some type of help for people with cystic fibrosis. But I realized that my skills really are in computer science, or at least back then they are in computer science. So I joined the Royal Institute of Technology. But I was always looking out for both startup opportunities and opportunities to help. And actually, during my university, I created a software, hardware solution type project that tracks the patient's breathing during nebulized treatment. And it tells people how to inhale medications better. I wanted to get some feedback from real doctors on this invention of mine. So I actually pretended to be a scientist briefly, and I made a poster presentation so I could get into the European Cystic Fibrosis Conference. This was back in 2014. And they accepted my poster presentation, even though it was probably the ugliest poster there. But they let me in, and I got there, and the doctors were very impressed with this technological advance. Unfortunately, I never started a company around that idea because I had recently gotten this job at Google and I was very busy. And I kind of shelved that for a bit. I still use it myself, but I never formed a company around that. So fast forward 7-8 years, and you know, I still have cystic fibrosis because it's a genetic condition, so it doesn't really go away. And I've always been very healthy for a CF patient. Normally, you track CF health by measuring the lung function, the FEV1 value, which is essentially how much air can you blow out in 1 second from your lungs. My FEV1 has always been around 100%, which I'm super happy about. But I've always had this problem with one pathogen in particular, Mycobacterium abscessus, which is a very, very tough pathogen, very hard to treat with antibiotics. It's been described as a clinical nightmare. And treatment for M. abscessus is very long, very brutal. And in 2022, so almost a year ago, I was actually on my honeymoon with my wife, and I started getting the symptoms of M. abscessus again, right? So I've had it for 11 years. And in particular, M. abscessus causes hemoptysis, right? Which is coughing up blood. And that's hard to miss, and it's never really a good sign. So it definitely made the last few days of our honeymoon a bit sad, even though Hawaii is great. You know, Hawaii is very nice. But we decided to dig into more what could be done for M. abscessus. And we read many research papers on the plane ride back, and, you know, also in the days afterwards. We read PhD theses and various sources, and we stumbled across this paper on phage therapy written by Rebecca Dedrick in 2019. So I think this is a fairly famous paper in the phage community as well. And it talked about treating M. abscessus with phage therapy. And it was kind of a little bit a blast from the past for us, because my wife, she was in the C. phages program way back in her undergrad. And wow. She isolated a bacteriophage on M. smegmatis, which is a relative of M. abscessus. And she told me about phage therapy back then. And back then, I think Stephanie Strathdee's husband had just gotten treated. So there was maybe one patient in the entire United States who was very, very nascent back then. He wasn't really ready for prime time. But now it seemed like it was ready for prime time. So we decided to give it a shot. We started reaching out to phage therapy providers, you know, if you could call them that, like research centers that did phage therapy. And, you know, in the US, that would be Graham Hatfield's lab at University of Pittsburgh. It's really the main place for M. abscessus and phage therapy. So we reached out to them, and we learned that the options are basically like, if everything else fails, like if we've tried antibiotics already, then we can reach out to them and we can send the strain of M. abscessus that I have. They can screen it against their phage library. And their phage library was all isolated on M. smegmatis. And using this undergrad program, the C. phages program, actually, and they would screen it. And if my M. abscessus strain was a smooth strain, they wouldn't have any phages against it. And if it was a rough strain, they might have phages that work against it. And they might have zero, they might have one, they might have two or three. And it may or may not work when you put it inside of the patient, right? So basically, the option was to wait until I had started my third round of antibiotics treatment, and that treatment started looking like it was going to fail, and then hope that whatever phages they had in their library would work against my strain. And at Google, we have a saying, hope is not a strategy, right? So it did not feel like a great idea to just kind of sit and wait for many, many months or up to a year and then hope that there would be something available for me when the time came and I really needed it. So we decided to start our own phage lab, and that's how it started. That's how we.
That's so cool. So as you said, because you have to transition from your computer science background into, you know, a complete new area for you. So how do you do that transition? How do you fill in the blank for the knowledge that maybe some of the new knowledge that you need to require to start a lab, or do you have other people helping you?
Yeah, that is an excellent question. So this is definitely a group effort. And I had, you know, the great advantage of having my wife helping out with this, like founding the lab, because she was in the C. phages program. So she already knew the basics of isolating a bacteriophage and characterizing it. So that was a huge help. And the universe really came together for us on this, because There are so many sources of information on microbiology. We obviously read a lot in the literature, like everything that's been published on Mycobacterium abscessus, on phage therapy in general, and phage therapy for mycobacteria specifically. You know, we definitely read everything. And the phage community, like the community of researchers, has been so incredibly helpful with us. We reach out to them with questions, and more often than not, they will take a meeting with us and explain. And we try to do a really good job of taking notes and learning as much as possible from each and every meeting, because we realize that people's time is valuable and we really, really appreciate it. It's, for example, we met with Jessica Sacker from Phage Directory, and she's been so incredibly helpful in, you know, either telling us what we're doing wrong or what we should do, or pointing us in the right direction, or just giving general advice. Every time we meet with her, it's great. Ben Temperton, who's been on your podcast, is also a great guy. He's given us a lot of great advice, and it really helps to have experienced practitioners to check your assumptions, really. And then we also, we try to, of course, we worked super hard in the beginning. We worked 7 days a week for many months. My wife, this is another example of where, you know, we were just so lucky in starting this lab at this time. So my wife had just finished her medical school, and she was taking a gap year before her medical residency. So she had the time to really help me get this started. And she's just been incredibly valuable and to this effort. Like we couldn't have done it without her. And I think the final thing really is that since I have a background in computer science and from Google, that's really helped as well, because we have very good data management in our lab. We track everything that goes on in the lab, and we make mistakes frequently. But since we have so good data management, we gathered more than 30,000 data points in the 6 months that we've been doing this. We can trace backwards and see what went wrong at a pretty good level of detail. So we very rarely make the same mistake twice. And we learn very quickly when something goes wrong. Like, for example, right at the very, very beginning, we couldn't even get a spot on M. smegmalis, right? And that's something that the undergrads succeed with in the C. phages program. So we were pretty down about that for about a week or two. And we traced backwards to check like every single step that we had done. And we traced the problem back to a single bottle of reagent, a bottle of calcium chloride, which when we compared it to the literature, we realized that it had half the concentration of calcium chloride that it should have had, according to all the sources. And we just bumped the calcium chloride and things started working. But imagine if we hadn't logged the calcium chloride bottle, right? Then we would just be banging our head against the wall for a very long time.
I see. So you're really good at keeping records of these experimental procedures, and you are also good at organizing the data. And that's a huge advantage because of your background.
Yeah, and also the first year when you start at Google, it's just learning as much as possible, as quickly as possible. They really, what they do at Google is like so different from the outside. So I've had a similar experience in the past where I had to learn a lot in a short time. So that really helped as well.
That's very inspirational. And one question for you here. You said you corrected some assumptions you had in before by talking to you. So can you give me an example from there?
Yeah, some assumptions that we made. You know, there's a lot of underlying assumptions in the literature. Like, for example, we make assumptions around how many phages can we actually find out in nature. And when the original paper was published by Rebecca Dedrick, if you go in and you read the supplemental section, like the section that most people don't read, you see that they went out and they screened for phages in nature for M. abscessus, and they found just one phage, and that phage wasn't really good. So at that point, given only that information, you know, the assumption is that it would be really hard to find phages for M. abscessus in nature. And we felt like that was an assumption that was definitely worth testing. And we're very happy to say that, you know, we have found a number of phages for M. abscessus. You know, another assumption, for example, is where can you find these guys? And we looked at the literature and we spoke to the experts, and we basically looked at all the environments where M. abscessus lives or has been found in various research papers. And we also spoke to people who did this research, and we created a list, and we're slowly working our way through that list of environments, because it's not just about finding as many phages as possible. You know, you also want to find phages that are diverse and that have a good ability to kill the strains of M. abscessus. Yeah, there's a ton of assumptions, and we do have a formal process for validating assumptions. It's also something I learned at Google, and it was incredibly successful for us in the various projects we did in Google's internal startup incubator. There's assumptions around science, there's assumptions around business, there's assumptions around regulations. Yeah, many, many assumptions.
Great. And so before we get to the current stage of your company, Toka.ai, what does it mean?
Yeah, so this is another example of me not liking to wait for things. You know, there's a real urgency, and I really want everybody to listen to this. Everybody who listens to this and is a phage scientist or working on phage therapy, there's a huge urgency among the patient population to find better alternatives to current antibiotics. So when we started this project, I already had a company that I had started before, also called Toka.ai, Toka.ai LLC. And Toka is Swedish, and it means to interpret. So it's a very good name, both for my previous business, which was a pure AI business, but also for this business going forward, because like it's really about picking the right phage for phage therapy. It's not so much, oh, we found one phage and here we go, you know. It's you ideally find more than one phage for a patient, and you really want to pick the right one. And when we started the lab, this was in August or September of last year, we were like, we're ready to go. We should go right now. And registering a new company and then registering it as a foreign company in the state of Florida takes like a month or so. And we were like, let's just use the old company. And the name stuck, and it actually kind of applies really well to this phage therapy business as well. My co-founder, who's also from Google, he told me that the more I learn about this bioinformatics stuff, the more opportunities I see for AI to apply it here. And there's opportunities to put AI in the bioinformatics stage of the pipeline, but also in the phage isolation stage of the pipeline, because really isolating phages is a lot about finding parameters, and it's a lot about crunching data at a relatively large amount of data at the same time and making good decisions based on that data. And a human can do these things, but eventually if we support more than a few patients, the human will get completely overwhelmed. So we definitely have to put the AI in strategic places in this process.
That's very interesting. So where are you now on this project?
Yeah, so we started 6 months ago. We have isolated several strains of M. abscessus from my sputum, both rough and smooth strains. So it's very lucky I started this project, because so far there are no published accounts of lytic phages for smooth strains of M. abscessus as far as we know. And we've also isolated over 50 candidate phages that we are currently in the process of purifying and sequencing. We sequenced the first phage a couple of weeks ago. We sent 5-6 more out a couple of days ago. So things are moving very quickly on the science side. And we hope to have something that can work as a phage therapy cocktail by this summer. So in a few months. And on the business side, you know, this is another example of where the universe just came together, you know, in sort of a sad event, but also very hopeful event. So back in January, our employer, Google, decided to lay off a pretty large fraction of their workforce. And that included everybody in the part of Google that I was working in. So I was working in the internal startup incubator that did more innovative and more risky projects, I suppose. And most of that got laid off. And it means that there's now about 100 people who have startup experience and who are extremely brilliant and, you know, very hardworking, currently on the market, looking to either start their own companies or join very early stage startups. So my friend from my previous team decided to join us, and he will do the bioinformatics and machine learning and IT infrastructure and all of that. And he's a brilliant guy, very hardworking, very great. So that we have that covered. We also have a microbiologist joining us, but we are looking for one more person to sort of round out the team, the founding team. Also a microbiologist, ideally somebody with a PhD and somebody with a background of preparing a phage therapy up to the standards of where the regulators need them to be to go into a patient. So more of the, less of the isolation and characterization experience, but more of the treating patients with a finished cocktail type experience. So if anybody's listening and, you know, they feel like this applies to me and they want to join a very early stage startup at the very beginning, definitely feel free to reach out to me after this. And then we are looking to start raise funding soon. So far, all of this has been self-funded by me. You actually don't need a ton of money to start a phage isolation, a characterization lab. But if we're going to start hiring people and if we're going to scale this up to more than one person, then we're going to have to start to raise funding. So definitely if there are any angel investors out there or venture philanthropists and that type of things, we will probably start taking meetings in 2-3 weeks from now.
Great. So where's your company at? See if I can join you.
Yeah. So we are based in Miami, beautiful sunny Miami. It's kind of a tropical paradise type location. So if that's your jam, definitely consider joining us. We're right next to the University of Miami Health Campus. So we rent our lab from the University of Miami, but we're not affiliated with them in more of a capacity than that. It's a great place to be, honestly. I love Miami. I used to live in the San Francisco Bay Area, but we moved over here during the pandemic, and we're gonna stay here. So it's a beautiful place. Definitely come visit.
Great. So here I'm gonna throw some hard questions at you. I assumed, you know, with your background story, you are going to probably be the first patient. Is that right?
Yeah.
Or is that your plan?
That is, yes, definitely the plan. So this is a custom phage therapy, right? So right now we're building a therapy for me, but the hope is that we can apply it to more people by making a customized therapy for them as well.
I see. So how does the regulation apply if you have a company and you want to treat yourself? Does it, how different is it from you have a company and you want to treat others? Are there any difference in the regulation?
So yeah, honestly, the regulation, we're digging more and more into it as we speak. I think this is a relatively unique situation where you have the founder of the company wanting to test a drug on himself. But I know that a major problem normally when you do this type of expanded access IND is to get informed consent, because, you know, how can you really know that the consent was really informed? Like, most patients are not phage experts, right? They don't, if you tell them that I'm going to make a phage cocktail, they might have a base level understanding of what that means in terms of risks. But I have an extremely deep understanding of what it means in terms of the risks, because, you know, I literally made the thing myself. So my consent will be a lot more informed than the average person's consent. So that is actually going in our trending in our direction. We're not risking an external person's health for, you know, this company. it's literally, you know, me, myself. So it reduces the risk in many ways. But, you know, we will interact more with the FDA going forward. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. The reason I'm asking about this is I believe, you know, there are more people with abscesses out there who is in need of this. And there is a lot more people who potentially are in need of phage therapy, but got rejected or just not aware of phage therapy for the same reason. So what I see, so, you know, when I first hear your story, I see this as so unique. Starting a company because you want to treat yourself. And my question is your story reproducible? Can someone else with the same goal, but with a different infection, can do the same thing, can replicate, sir? Because obviously, you know, you're highly educated, you have a great experience, you have a great entrepreneurial spirit here, and you have a great team. But for someone who doesn't have that, how hard could it be for them to do the same thing, exact same thing, to get to where you are?
Yeah. So starting a phage therapy lab, you know, I'm not going to lie, it is very hard. And it is a lot of work. And I think having my background in, you know, I've worked in many startups and startup-like projects, it's been incredibly helpful for this type of background. And also, you know, having many years of being the patient and just learning about this for years and years has been really helpful. And then my wife, having been in the C-Phages program, she's also an MD, of course. And yeah, she also has those connections with other MDs and MD students and that type of thing. So, you know, the universe really came together to help us get this off the ground, and also have the financial resources. You know, it is definitely on the order of, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, if not $100,000, to get to this point. So it's not cheap. But actually, compared to the cost of the antibiotics I'm taking right now, $100,000 is not that much money, but it's a lot of money to pay out of pocket, for sure. So yeah, I don't know if it's super reproducible, and that's why we're hoping that we can bring this to as many people as quickly as possible. Because I think phage therapy has this unique property where we know that it's safe, right? And the FDA has been fairly lenient with the toxicity studies and testing, essentially no toxicity studies. So we have a chance of bringing this to the market quickly, and we're going to push as hard as we can to do that. But in terms of reproducing it, definitely you should know that you're in for, you know, 7-day work weeks and spending lots and lots of money and a fair amount of stress. And still it may not work. So you definitely have to have a risk-taking attitude. For me, the risk is just completely worth it. But that might not apply to everybody else.
I see. Okay, before I throw the next question at you, how much is the current antibiotic treatment for you?
Well, so the average cost of M. abscessus treatment in 2009, it was $50,000 per treatment. You're going to remember that this treatment is 12 months long or longer, and the antibiotics are rare, so they cost more. But for me personally, it is far more than that. It is more than $100,000 for sure. It could even be like significantly higher than that. So I'm currently calculating like exactly what this is going to land at for the insurance company, but they pay a lot for M. abscessus treatment for sure. And actually, you know, people talk about how the antibacterial market is like such a terrible market to be in, and that for companies to make money, biotechs. And that is true in general. The only company that has been able to make a good profit on making a new antibacterial is Insmed, right? And they make a drug called Arikayce, which is inhaled amikacin. So the amikacin has been around since 1948, but they figured out how to make it inhaled rather than IV. And this, I believe their valuation on the stock market is around $3 billion. And I'm currently taking Arikayce right now because Arikayce is used to treat M. abscessus, and it's one reason why it's expensive. And my voice is actually more hoarse than it normally is, because a main side effect of Arikayce is hoarseness, or you lose your voice. But of course, the dangerous side effect of ARIKAYCE is permanent hearing loss or ototoxicity, which actually happens to a significant fraction of the people. So there's definitely, we need more alternatives for treating abscesses.
Right. So I just want to bring up a hypothetical question here for you. As you expand your business in the long term, do you see maybe people who doesn't have the resource, who doesn't have the knowledge, as you described, maybe can ask you to help them find the right fate for them, like a CFISH program? You see that happening?
Yes. We're basically going for the customized phage cocktail approach. You know, we're only targeting Mycobacterium abscesses for now and for the foreseeable future, because, you know, there are differences between bacteria and how you grow them and how you isolate them. And there are real serious questions related to the regulatory side of things and the production and stuff like that. But definitely the long-term goal, like the long-term vision, is that a patient will come in to the clinic, they spit in a cup, and then we sequence whatever's in that sputum. We figure out which bacteria is causing the problem, the infection, and we already have a phage, or we have the ability to find a phage cocktail for this patient and treat them as soon as possible. That's the long-term vision, and we will work super hard to get there as soon as possible.
Great. You know, that sounds like very exciting plans. Thanks so much for your time, and I hope to hear some progress from you, and let's keep in touch.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
That's Johan Wilkstrom, founder and CEO at Toka.ai. I'm Stephen, and you're listening to the Phage Therapy Today podcast. Thanks for liking our content, and be sure to like, subscribe, and give us 5 stars. If you have a story to share or have any feedback, feel free to email us at phagetherapytoday@gmail.com. Hope you have a great rest of your week.